Alcoholic. Very good. All right. I guess everyone can hear me. I'm sober since June 5th, 2010. I have a home group, the Connect the Dots group in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're ever around about these parts, come on, stop by. We meet Monday, Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. I have a sponsor, Bob Darrell. He knows he's my sponsor. I have a service position in that home group, and I sponsor men and Alcoholics Anonymous. My life changed the day I became willing to take instructions that I did not believe in. The day I was willing to do things that made absolutely no sense to me. I was driving this new guy to our home group on Friday night, and I used to sponsor him, and he's been back in and back out, and you know, he just came back, and he's got one day, and he's telling me all about his plan, and he's got a new job, and he's going to get an apartment, and you know, he's going to get this girlfriend back, and na 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 na. He's got all these plans, and I said, "Man, you are a smart guy, and you're a likable guy, and you're a hard worker, and every time you make one of these plans, it seems to just blow up in your face." And he was a little taken back. And I said, "You know, man, my life changed the day I became willing to listen to instructions that I did not believe in. You know, I when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I think like a lot of us do, I understood the first part of the first step. And what the first part of the first step says is that I cannot control imbibing alcohol, right? That I'm the guy who goes out and I say I'm going to have two drinks, or I say I'm going to have four drinks, or I say I'm going to have seven drinks, right? You don't, seven's not terrible, right? You might do a, no, you don't often end up in jail on seven drinks, right? Like, you know, and I could never make it, you know. I got sober before I was 21 years old, so it wasn't like I could just go into any bar and drink. But there was this bar, I knew the owner, and he had said, "Hey, Rory, you can come drink at my bar, but listen, you got to limit yourself. You know, you can't go crazy in here. You can't get wildly drunk in here because I could lose my liquor license from serving you." And he was a good guy. He was a good friend of mine. I said, Chris was his name. "I'm not going to do anything crazy. I'm going to come in. I'm going to have some beers, maybe a couple whiskey sours. I'm going to shoot pool with my buddies. I'm not going crazy in here, I promise you." And I meant it. I meant that promise to him, right? And I went in there the first time and the second time, and maybe it was the third time I was in there. I'm completely drunk. I fall off a bar stool. I get in a fight with the guy in the band, and I get thrown out without my pants on. You know, I promise I won't reenact that part of it for you today. But I can't ever seem to control it, right? I'm the guy who, I swear to God, I'm gonna be home by Sunday. I promise I'm gonna be home by Sunday. And I'll get home by Sunday. It just might not have been the original Sunday that I was aiming for, right? And unfortunately, girlfriends and family, they're real sticklers about it being the correct Sunday, you know, that you said initially, right? So I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've got this piece of the deal. I've got this piece of the deal that I can't seem to control how much I drink. And I get that. But what I don't understand is that why is it that when I really, really want to stop, when I really mean that I want to stop, I can't ever seem to stay stopped, right? When I was 17 years old, I got an assault charge, and I pleaded with my mother, "If you'll put the lawyer on the credit card, I swear to God, I'm not going to do this again." And I meant it. You could have hooked me up to a lie detector test, and I would have passed the lie detector test. I'm really, really not going to do this again. I have never once in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober quite a while. I've sponsored hundreds of guys over the years, heard hundreds of fifth steps, and I've never once met a psychopath, right? I've never once had someone come into my office or come sit down in my living room or sit down here in my office at the house and tell me, "Rory, I want to break my mother's heart. I want to make my wife terrified of me. I want to make my children cry when I come in the room. I want to make my boss regret hiring me." I've never met that guy. But inevitably, so many of us end up there again and again and again. I'm no different, right? So I'm the guy who promises my mother in the lobby of that courtroom, "I am never, ever going to do this again," while she's sitting behind me at the, you know, I'm at the defense table, and she's sitting behind me and sobbing. And I mean it when I say it. And, you know, when I go to my father and I say, "Dad, I swear to God, if you let me move back in the house, I'm never going to do this again." I swear to him. And I mean it then too. You could have hooked me up to a lie detector test, and I would have passed both times. But see, what I didn't know is I might have well as promised that man that I was going to sprout wings and fly around the room and come back and land, because I do not have the ability to make that promise, right? And what happened to me is not that much different than happens to a lot of us. I lost basically anyone who would let me stay with them or give me work or anything like that. I tried being a I tried being a hobosexual for a while, which is where you fall in love for a place to live. And I could pull that off 16 years ago, full head of hair. I'm fat and bald now, so it's very important I stay gainfully employed. And I ended up where all good gangsters end up, right? Living in my mother's basement. I mean, that's just, there's something about being a gangster that just draws you to mom's basement, you know? I used to live down in Austin, Texas, and I was in this late night meeting one time, and this young kid shared, and he goes, "I'm a gangster, and gangsters don't need sponsors." And I mean, I loved him so much when he said that, I almost asked him to sponsor me. I mean, it was great, right? And but I kind of, slid up to him in the meeting after the meeting in the parking lot having a cigarette, and I said, "Hey, man, any chance you live with your mother?" And he goes, "I live with my grandmother. How'd you know?" I was like, "Part of the club, baby, right on." And so I get thrown out of there, and I start going to meetings Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't start going to meetings Alcoholics Anonymous because I think I'm alcoholic. I'm going to meetings Alcoholics Anonymous because I've got to have some way to convince you I'm trying to get better, so you'll let me, so mom will let me stay in the basement and bum me some money for basic cigarettes, right? And I'm going to your meetings, and I'm going to a lot of your friggin' meetings. I mean, my first month of sobriety, I probably went to 3 meetings a day. I smoked 5 packs of cigarettes a day, and I hated every single frickin' meeting, because they're just, when you're new, AA is horrible, right? Because everyone is so flippin' grateful for everything. And I'm just sitting in the meeting. I'm just trying to not shake the friggin' coffee out of my hand and bum a smoke after the meeting. And there's some idiot in there who's, wants to tell you about how he used to be, living under the bridge, but through the miracle of the golden stairs, now he's vice president of the bank, And the worst one is, especially if it's on a day that it was raining, somebody saw a rainbow on the way to the meeting, so they know God wants them in AA, and you just want to punch that guy. I mean, the rainbow guy, there's nobody worse than the rainbow guy. But I'm going to these meetings, and it's, I hate it. I friggin' hate it. And what's worse, the worst thing about this is you all seem like a friggin' cult, right? Like, we go to a meeting every day, and we take the meeting into the detoxes and the jails, and and on the weekends, that's when we have the big fun. We have the AA cookout, right? And I'm like, oh my God, I might, I'm driving away from these meetings thinking, what a bunch of losers these people are. I might rather shoot myself than turn into this, But you got to admire alcoholics, man, because we're the only people in the world that can be laying face down in the gutter and find a way to look down on you, right? Because these people, these weirdo cult people, they're all going home to houses that they own or their name is on the lease, and they're driving vehicles that are licensed and registered in their names and going to jobs that give them a. I was sober 2 years before I had a license, registration, and insurance all at the same time. That was its own spiritual experience for me, right? And so I'm going to these meetings, I'm going to a lot of these meetings, and I'm not getting any better. In fact, I'm getting more miserable and more miserable and more miserable. And I was sober just about a month, and I was at the AA cookout. Oh my God. And it was 4th of July, so I would have been just shy of a month sober. And I'm hanging out at the AA cookout, and there's hot dog and hamburger, macaroni salad. And there's a speaker like there is today, and he's going on about how he used to live under a bridge, but through the miracle of the 12 golden stairs, now he's vice president of the bank. And oh my God, and I hate every single word that's coming out of his mouth, right? So if any of you are sitting there today feeling that way, much love, you're represented. And I'm hanging out, and this girl, she asks me if I want to leave the cookout with her, right? And if you look like me and a girl asks you if you want to do anything, the answer is yes, right? And especially anything that gets me out of an AA cookout. I mean, that's an easy deal to figure. So we leave the cookout, and we go down with her friends down off Solomon's Island Road, and her friends are drinking Bud Limes and they're eating OxyContin. And oh my God, now I got a big problem because I'm in that space where I really, y'all know what it's like when you really, really want to drink, but you don't want to drink, right? And I don't know what to do because it's like the cells in my body are at war with each other because I want to drink these drinks, right? But everybody, but I've shot my last shot on I'm in AA now. Let me stay here. I'm in AA now. Give me some work. I'm in AA now. Take me back, baby. I'm in AA now, right? So I don't know what to do, and I'm watching him drink these drinks like a cat watches you eat a tuna fish sandwich, man. I mean, I am just locked in, right? And very fortunately, I didn't drink that day, and I ended up at a meeting the next day on Duke of Gloucester Street in Annapolis, Maryland. And I'm outside the meeting, and I'm, mean mugging everybody, smoking a Marlboro cigarette, and this guy comes up to me and he starts asking me some questions. And I didn't know this was what he was asking me, but he was asking me if I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or if I was attending Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know there was a difference between those things. And he starts asking me questions like, do you have a home group? Do you have a service position? Do you have a sponsor? No. And I definitely didn't want to get a sponsor, man, because sponsor sounds way too much like parole officer for me to be interested in that, I don't know. I just learned this the other day, actually. Sponsor comes from the ancient Greek, and it means where fun goes to die, right? And that's how you know you have a good sponsor, if he just seems really against your fun. And so these guys asking me these questions: Oh, do you have a home group? Do you have a sponsor? No. And fortunately, man, this guy had the two most important things he could have at that time. He was properly armed with the facts about himself, and he was a little bit of an asshole, right? Because you got to remember, this was 16 years ago, right? You didn't have to be nice to newcomers back then, right? Nowadays, we're supposed to tell you your miracles and I don't know, some whatever stupid crap, right? I mean, this guy was straight up with me. He took a drag of his Parliament cigarette and he put his finger in my chest and he said, "You're gonna die, bro." And I'm gonna die, right? You're supposed to tell me to keep coming back because it works and I worth it and I'm working it, so work it and worth it. And I don't know, whatever they say, it drives me crazy. And he said, "You're gonna die, bro." And I was furious. I was ready to fist fight him outside the meeting, which just made him laugh even more. And then he did the important thing we do. He took me with him. He didn't give me a book and say, "Read the doctor's opinion and call me in a week." He took me with him. There were about four or five meetings in that area that they all went to every week. They went to Friday night, they went to Saturday, they went to Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. And they just dragged me with them, man. And they took me to diners and bought me cheeseburgers. And as they're doing that, they're explaining to me what alcoholism is, which was what I didn't understand. In page 21 of our book, it says the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. And he started to ask me about all the times I really said, "I'm not going to drink," and I meant it. The time I got arrested on that assault charge, the time that I moved into my father's house, all those times, the time I tried to join the church, I said, "I'm not going to drink," and I meant it. And why was it that when I said, "I'm not going to drink," I can only hold on for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 weeks? Why is it that I always drink again? And he took me to page 52 in our book, and he took me, to XXVIII. And what he explained to me is that the main problem that what we treat here in Alcoholics Anonymous isn't alcohol, it's sobriety. We treat that uncomfortable feeling, that feeling that everyone's talking about me, and I've felt that all my life, that feeling that I don't fit anywhere, that voice in my head at 2 o'clock in the morning that just won't stop playing the wreckage of my future, just like, "They're gonna fire you tomorrow. She's probably sleeping with somebody else. Remember that stupid thing you said in the third grade? Let's make a list of the people who laughed at you when you said it," right? Blah, 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 blah. This Clancy I used to put it better than anybody else. This spring in my gut that just gets so miserably tight. That feeling when I'm at the grocery store and I'm in the 10-item line and I notice the guy in front of me has 11 items. And I noticed because I've counted it about 10 times, and you will not make a punk of me at the grocery store today, right? They explained to me that my real problem is that sobriety feels so miserable that after a while, I'll talk myself into drinking again, even if I've sworn to God I'm not going to. And what happened is they. All the men in that home group used to go out to the beach once a year, and I went out to the beach with these guys, and we're throwing the football and we're swimming in the ocean and everything, and we're talking a little bit about AA and we're telling some drunk stories and laughing. But what really got me, man, is these guys started talking about their lives, right? And these guys had like real lives. I mean, one of the guys, he just gotten accepted into law school. He's now a very, very powerful lawyer out in Washington. And two of the guys were starting a business together, software business. They sold that business, made millions. I mean, these guys, like, some of the guys were having children and starting families, like having children the right way, where there's like wedding vows and stuff, not the way I have kids, where someone calls and says I'm pregnant, like that, the right, the way you're supposed to do it. And these were like full on functioning members of society. And in our book, what does it say? It says, when we were convinced in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it, and we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved. And that was the case. I didn't agree with this whole AA thing y'all were talking about, but I knew what I was doing wasn't working, and something was working for these guys, man. And so I'm on the way back from the beach with these guys, and I'm in the car with this guy named Jimmy Baez, and I'm telling him all my problems, all how bad my life is, and how everybody's done me wrong, right? And Jimmy's just kind of smoking his cigarettes, And I say, Jimmy, what do I do? And I'm waiting for him to give me some deep spiritual, psychological, Freudian answer. And Jimmy says, I think we need a cigarette butt picker-upper at the Friday night meeting. And I'm offended. It's like I've told you all these deep problems in my life, and you think the answer is for me to pick up cigarette butts at the Friday night meeting? But I was fortunate because I was, what does the book say? I was beaten into a state of reasonableness. I became, my life changed at that moment when I became willing to take instructions I did not agree with. And I'm out there and I'm picking up the cigarette butts, right? And I'm hating it. I'm in my head. I'm like, I'm in this stupid cult. They got me picking up their stupid cigarette butts. And let me be clear, I have no problem being in a cult. I just don't want to be the low guy in the cult, right? I want to be the robes and the followers and the girls. I want to be Hare Krishna, right? I don't want to be the janitor of the cult, right? But I start to notice something, and what I notice is as I come back to that meeting every week, I feel a part of. I feel that spring in my gut loosening up just a little bit, that voice in my head quieting down a little bit more. I remember going to my sponsor. I couldn't have been any more than at most 3 months sober. I told him I was depressed. I was very depressed. He goes, you're, and he got this sour look on his face. You're depressed. Yeah, I'm depressed. Your life is depressing. You live in your mother's basement and you bum cigarettes off people. What are you doing to help somebody? And you got to be, for the new guys, you got to be, you can't be too honest with your sponsor if you want to avoid service work in AA, right? And as a result of that, I end up having to drive every Friday night up to the mission in Baltimore to pick up all the guys at the mission, bring them back to the home group, bring them back to the mission afterwards. And if I can afford it, I got to stop off and get a McDonald's on the way back. And I don't understand what the hell being my sponsor's tax cab service has anything to do with staying sober. But what I notice is that as these guys are getting out of my truck on a Friday night, that spring in my gut seems really, really loose. The voice in my head seems pretty quiet. If you read the medical view of AA at the end of our big book, what does it say? It says, through his constant work for others, the alcoholic often overcomes his obsessive overconcentration on himself. And I'll tell you what, man, constant work for others has never felt like the right answer. At 16 years of sobriety, it doesn't.
Minute.
I sold my place in Texas and I moved back to Las Vegas about a year ago, year and a half ago. And I wasn't feeling at home in AA. I wasn't feeling like I'm fitting in AA, right? And this is years later, and I've built an incredibly successful life here. I own businesses and properties and all that good stuff. And I go to my sponsor, I tell him, Bob, I don't know what's going on. I feel like I don't fit in. I don't want to be here. I don't want to. And he goes, Rory, what you probably need is a service position. And I was like, yeah, I think I do. I was chairman of the largest meeting in Austin, 500 people. I could really help get your group in line here. And Bob goes, no, I think bathroom cleaner would be a good one for you, right? And no different, right? I'm in there and I'm cleaning the bathrooms, and this is with a decade and a half of sobriety, owning businesses all over the country. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. I'm in this stupid cult that got me cleaning their stupid bathrooms, right? But as I'm leaving the Monday night meeting with all the other cleanup guys, the spring in my gut is loose and the voice in my head is quiet. And I've just got about a minute and I'll end with this, man. If you go over to England, if you go over to the old neighborhoods in England around Piccadilly, and you look up at the street lamps, right? What you'll see in the street lamps is at the bottom of the lamp, you'll see a little door that is welded shut, right? And what that is with these lamps that were installed in the 1800s, they didn't turn on electrically. There was a person, his name was, it was called the lamplighter, who would go around to every single lamp and they would turn the key to initiate the gas, and then they'd have a stick with a little flame at the end of it, and they'd manually light every single lamp. And if you stood way high up on the Tower of London, you couldn't see the lamplighter, but you could see where he'd been through the trail of lights. And I think that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. We're just looking for the trail of lights, and then we grab on at the end and we do what the people ahead of us do. And it's on offer for everyone, man. It's on offer for everyone. But the only thing that keeps me away from it is when I think I know better. When I think I was texting up. The two lies a speaker tells, I'll be brief and I'll end with this, right? I do a good, not a ton, but I do a little bit of speaking around AA, and I was speaking down in Georgia, and this person reached out to me and they said they were really struggling, and they said they're struggling with spirituality. And I started asking them questions. I said, how many people do you sponsor? How many in-person meetings do you attend every week? How many commitments do you have at those in-person meetings? Well, no, you don't understand. I'm struggling with my spirituality. Page 14 of our book, it says we perfect and enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. I only get to stay here if I'm willing to work and self-sacrifice, even when it doesn't sound like what I need at all. So I hope that your feelings of difference are reduced enough that you'll take actions you do not believe in. Thanks for letting me share.